Chapter 26. Shaken. Ed's footsteps echoed, desolate and hollow as he strode along the halls of Central Command, his mind whirling as he tried to remember more about the book he needed. The author had theorized that arrays could be used for travel, their energy patterns contracting distance into a tiny space that could be traversed in a matter of seconds. At the time, it had seemed far-fetched, and besides, it wasn't about the stone, so he had tossed the book aside. Now it could be the one text he needed. Babylon was probably thousands of miles away, lost forever in the parched hush of the desert, but if he could use an array to get there, it would only take a few seconds to go from Central's bustle to the dust-dry deserts of Kaleo's home. The gate knew about the book and the alchemy it contained. Ed could feel the knowledge drifting tantalizingly out of his reach. But every time he tried to focus his mind, the arrays drifted away, vanishing like mist. All the while, it felt as if he was being observed with patronizing patience, like the gate was his master, and it was waiting to see what new trick he would perform next. With a snort of annoyance, he scowled at himself. He did not need the knowledge of the gate to do great things. He was a genius before it ever came along, and now it was time to prove it. Pushing the doors to the command building open, he hesitated. Rain streamed down from the pregnant clouds, creating a glimmering curtain of silver that crashed down all over the city. The parade ground, used to the thud of soldiers' boots, resonated with the hiss of the deluge. It would not be long before the whole thing was covered in a thin mirror of water. The dark was thick, almost absolute. Dawn was a weak struggle on the eastern horizon, and even when the sun rose, it would still be like night, the light muted by thick clouds overhead. It was unnatural. Perhaps to a civilian it looked like a normal rainstorm, something to be ignored until it passed. But Ed could feel the snap of alchemy in the air, and its thrill on the wind. Energy from the gate was already seeping into Amstress. The weather was just one example of its effect. Grimly, he wondered how long they had before other, more dangerous signs of weakness began to show. Splashing down the steps, he shivered as the rain collected in his hair and ran down his neck, soaking his clothes in seconds. The cloth slicked to his body like a second skin, and his feet squelched in his boots as he hurried along. A sharp wind blew across the square, driving squalls before it and making the lampposts tremble in its wrath. Ed broke into a sprint, shattering the puddles into flying droplets as he ran across the plaza and out into the street, taking the route he knew by heart. It took only a couple of minutes to get to the library, but he was already shivering and breathless from the chill. Water carved its way down his face like tears, and he wiped his palms across his cheeks as he glared at the dark countenance of the municipal building. Flanking the steps, as always, the two lions gleamed, their stone skins slick with the wet. Thunder growled overhead, giving the sculptures voice as lightning flashed across the sky. Most of the time, Ed forgot how terrifying storms could be. People made the world their own, stamping their presence across its face with their cities and civilizations. It was only on nights like tonight that he realized how meaningless they were. One bad storm could wipe away centuries of settlement in a few hours. He just hoped that would not happen to Central. Taking the steps two at a time, he pounded on the door, scowling at the dim windows. Of course, the library would not be open until 9. It might be a major provider to the military, but it was not obligated to keep an all-night staff. If an alchemist needed to do research, he could wait until opening hours. Ed growled in irritation, flicking his wet hair out of his eyes before glancing over his shoulder and checking that the street was empty. He did not have time to wait for some bookworm to get out of bed and let him in. He needed that book now. Quietly, he clapped his hands and pressed his palms to the lock, feeling the metal change, becoming useless in the space of a heartbeat. The door creaked open, sending a rough-edged sound rasping through the expectant silence of the library. Only the emergency lighting was on, giving dim definition to the shelves that stood guard. Ed took a deep breath of the air, taking a moment to be comforted by the smell of paper and binding glue. He had spent so much time in here over the years that it was practically a second home. He knew the layout like the back of his hand, and his knowledge of the books was pretty good. Nowhere near as encyclopedic as Shezka's, but good enough. Water dripped onto the floor as he walked through the aisles at a steady pace. Running here would be too much like sacrilege. There was no point in drying off. He planned to grab the book and take it straight back to Central Command. He could work on the problem of how to get to Babylon from there. Guilt at leaving Roy behind was already a sticky, thrashing thing in his stomach, and he knew he would feel better, stronger, if he had Roy and the others around him. Alone, even with all the power coursing through him like wine in his veins, he felt vulnerable. Reaching out a hand absently, he dragged his fingertips along the uneven spines of the books, feeling the rasp and sweep of their bindings against his skin. The shelves were never dusty, and a tome out of place was soon returned to its home by a staff so keen that they bordered on terrifying. He knew exactly what he was looking for, and precisely where he was going. Over the years, he had walked this same stretch of floor more times than he could count. A wave of remembered emotion, all his own, washed over him. The desperation of his quest for the Philosopher's Stone was still as sharp on his tongue as it had been that very first day. He could almost hear the clank of Al's armor and feel the solid presence of 7 feet of metal at his side. For all that he adored his brother as he was now, flesh and bone and soul and free, there were times when he still found himself looking around and expecting to see that suit of armor and the brightly burning eyes within its helmet. "Never thought I'd miss it," Ed murmured to himself, turning the corner into one of the secluded workspaces. A table and chairs stood within the walls of the bookshelves, a fair way off of the beaten thoroughfare of the library. He and Al had ferreted themselves away here often enough, trying to escape the prying eyes of civilians and military personnel alike. Back then, they were both such curiosities. A suit of armor that could move, and a boy with more prosthetics at 12 years old than most soldiers survived to have installed. At least Al was normal now, subject to no more than the occasional admiring glance. As for Ed, well, he had just got used to it. Pulling together his scattered thoughts, Ed concentrated on the bookcases, walking his fingers along one title after the other. It was here. He could remember it with crystal clarity. They had been thick-headed, swamped with the search for the stone, and lost amidst arrays that men were never meant to know. More than once they had taken a quick break to skim through the books that surrounded them, laughing at their contents. The one he was looking for now had been somewhere among them. Minutes slipped away as he made his way steadily through the shelves, fighting off the burn of his impatience. Come on, where the hell was it? He didn't have time for a pointless search. Perhaps someone had checked it out. That would be just his luck, for the one book he needed to save the damn world to be sitting in someone's office somewhere rather than on the shelf where it lived. Finally, his bare fingers brushed against a maroon leather cover, faded and battered. The gold lettering on the spine of the small book had worn off, but it only took a second for him to pull it free from its brothers and check that it was exactly what he was looking for. Worn yellow pages, crisp with age and hardly used, fanned under his touch, and he skimmed a few passages with his breath locked in his throat. It would not be easy. He knew that like a sickness in his soul. The alchemy was untested. It had to be, because most alchemists never achieved the kind of level required to power the designs. Probably only those who had brushed too close to the gate stood any chance at all. And even then, there was the risk of it going spectacularly wrong. If he tried it, there would only be one chance. If he fucked it up? A soft rustling broke into Ed's thoughts, and he looked up, eyeing the gloom as he shut the book and eased away from the shelves. There should not be anyone else in here. Not at this time of night. Even cleaners would be asleep at this hour. Yet something filled the air with whispers. Straining his ears, Ed swallowed tightly, holding his breath as he caught the faint drag of footsteps, like someone shuffling about amidst the nest of literature the library had to offer. It was not a librarian. They were monarchs of their domain and strode righteously along every aisle, seeing those who read their books as nothing more than an inconvenience. Whoever this was, they were staggering, their feet tripping and stumbling as they got closer to his position. Ed licked his lips and peered out into the aisle, looking along its shady length for signs of another living soul. The place was bare and stark, with nothing but the floor stretching away to the dark walls and the grim towers of the bookcases. Dim lights flickered sporadically overhead, and beyond the windows the lightning flashed and raged. Tucking the book under his arm so that both hands were free to clap, he slipped out of the workspace and crept along the corridor, his breathing shallow and slow as he struggled to discern the strange sounds from the growls of the storm. Whoever it was had fallen silent, and Ed could feel his skin thrilling with apprehension as the hairs on the back of his neck stood on end. Perhaps they were trying to fool him into thinking he had imagined their uneven footsteps, but he was not an idiot. He had not survived this long by ignoring his instincts. He moved in a slight crouch to muffle the hollow sounds of his automail leg, pressing his back to the shelves as his gaze swept the path ahead. If he ran, he could make it back to the door and out into the storm within a half minute, but there was no guarantee that whatever stalked him was slower than he was. Breaking into a sprint now was admitting that he was the prey and they the predator. That was not a distinction that sat well with him. Step by step, he gained ground toward the main passageway among the shelves. Ahead, the librarian's desks were bathed in a pool of light, haloed in a welcoming glow. Beyond them were the doors, hanging ajar to show an inviting glimpse of the world outside and the short, sharp run back to Central Command. A shadow lurched in front of the light, making Ed recoil in shock, pulling himself back into the gloom and cursing as the books shifted on their shelf. He could not make out what it was, but he could smell it. It was the same scent that had lingered around the coffins that Carmine had stolen. Not rancid, but old and dusty, like stale air locked in a tomb, underscored by the clinging aroma of wet soil, earthy and rich. He remembered the reanimated corpses at Ryder's, barely more than bones and rags that seemed intent on robbing life from everything they came across. Back in the Grindle, some of the bodies had fallen victim to the sharp edge of a knife, and Ed did not miss the gleam of an edged weapon in the silhouette's hand. It was here to kill, not capture, and he wondered if they were entirely driven by Carmine's will, or if they had minds of some kind. Were they after something in particular, or were they following orders with the blindness of those with no life left to live? Another shape staggered up to join the first, wrapped from head to toe in a raggy coat that hid its body from view. It tugged on its own sleeve with two thin fingers before beckoning to its partner. The two things bent their heads together in some kind of communication. One pointed away towards the far wall and gave an exaggerated shrug, while the other flicked its knife back and forth like the needle of a metronome. Neither seemed to have noticed him, and Ed let out a quiet pant of relief. The sound of shattering wood beside his ear was like a gunshot, and a splinter scored a bloody line along his cheek. He leapt away with a startled cry, staring at the spilled books and the skeletal hand that groped through the hole in the bookshelves. Thin fingers, nothing more than bone sheathed in the last translucent veils of skin, clacked eerily, blindly questing for him as he backed away. Carmine's creatures might look fragile, but that thing had just punched through solid oak without any sign of struggle in order to get at him. A gruesome rattling made him look back to see the other two approaching at an unsteady run, tattered clothes fluttering like broken wings as they shambled forward, bones jutted at odd angles from emaciated flesh, and empty eye sockets stared balefully at him as their mouths hung open, emitting a chilling series of clicks that could, in a human mouth, have been words. The hand lunged forward, fingers clenching closed a fraction from his face, with a sound like castanets. The creature on the other side must have had its shoulder against the bookcase, and the whole thing was tottering perilously, wobbling around its center of equilibrium as the books fell like oversized hail. It was easy for instinct to take over, for his legs to pump into a sprint, ducking and weaving between the shelves and away, deeper into the library. Logically, he knew that they were puppets, and that there was no soul caught within those bones operating the strings. But they inspired debilitating horror within him, reducing him to something almost helpless. With ribs half open and ropey tendons standing out like bowlines, they were too strong a reminder. One look at them and he was instantly transported back there, staring into the gaping, pain-shot eyes of the monster with his mother's broken face. Roy had never asked why, back at Ryder's, Ed had hesitated before slamming Carmine with everything he had to spare. The truth was that, for a moment, while Roy was pinned and choking on air too thin to breathe, Ed had been frozen by fear. Not of Carmine, who may not be human but was fallible nonetheless, but by her henchmen, who are just the husks of long-dead people given life. They were the product of something on the gray, blurred border where alchemy crossed over into something closer to witchcraft, a keen reminder of the lines that should never be crossed. He skidded around a corner, risking a glance behind and cursing under his breath as he saw them pause, giving some thought to their pursuit. One of them charged, putting on a burst of speed and crashing into one of the bigger sets of shelves. The impact broke him into bits, and the clinging static of the alchemy unwound through the air before dissipating, leaving nothing in its wake but a skull and a few sad bones. The damage was done, though, and Ed sped up as he heard the first bookcase fall, knocking over its neighbor as if they were a giant set of dominoes. He zigzagged haplessly, knowing that he had to get away before he was crushed. Rhythmic crashes gained speed, racing towards him as the shelves toppled like felled soldiers, dripping bookish blood onto the floor. He was too busy looking over his shoulder to notice what was happening in front of him, and he almost ran into the wall. At the last second, he switched directions, running as fast as he could towards the door as the shelves to his left were clipped by their brothers and began to sway before crashing down. Taking a deep, desperate breath, Ed dove for the floor, slamming his arms over his head and curling into a ball as various texts struck his back, bruising him with their sharp corners. He expected the painful crack of solid wood across his shoulders and spine, but with a snapping creak, the din began to die away. And when he risked a glance around, he realized that the bookcases were propped against the wall, creating a small triangular crawl space. Stripes of light dappled the ground, and he searched frantically for the maroon book. He had dropped it when taking cover, and he was not about to go through all this only to lose the damn thing. Freeing it from underneath a pile of other tomes, he forced himself to stop and think. He could still hear the two remaining corpse-like figures clicking to one another. They were prowling the shattered mess of the stacks, looking for him. Fire worked. He had seen Roy burn one to nothing more than ash and vapor. But Ed was not an idiot. Lighting a flame in a building full of wood and paper was not a good idea. He would probably end up toasted in the resulting inferno. Alchemy held the henchmen together, but even if he could find some way to unravel the energy that was their glue, he knew their presence could mean only one thing. Carmine was nearby. If that was the case, he did not dare waste power that he might need. He swallowed the tight knot of apprehension that had lodged itself in his throat and began to creep forward, almost crawling to avoid banging his head. The splayed pages of books ripped and rustled under his feet, but he forced himself to focus all his attention on the sounds from the creatures, the clumsy shuffle of their footsteps and the creaky cadaver noises of their bones. If he knew where they were, then he had the advantage. Something landed with a thud above his head, making the bookcase above him creak threateningly under its weight. It began to bounce, stamping up and down like a child jumping on a bed. As quietly as he could, Ed pressed his hands together, muscles in his legs tightening in preparation as he pressed his palms to the underside and unleashed the force of his alchemy. Wood burst outward in a flower of splinters, giving him the space he needed to jump up and out, stumbling gracelessly for balance on the rungs of the exposed shelves. A knife sailed out of nowhere, missing him by a hair's breadth and shuddering into the wall. The creature who had thrown it gurgled in annoyance, leaping clumsily over the shattered remains of the library furniture towards him. Its friend was the one who had been jumping about above his head, and now it dropped into a watchful crouch, disfigured hands outstretched for balance as it coiled and lunged, scrabbling like a wild animal across the wood towards him. Ed leapt back, forcing himself to stop thinking and just act. He threw the book over his shoulder, hurling it as close to the doors as he could. It would be no good to him if these things made sure he could never read it. The heel of his boot caught in the gap as he flailed his arms in a useless attempt to keep his balance, swearing bitterly as he crashed back against the unforgiving wood. One of the creatures gave a keening call of triumph and jumped forward, its feet landing on his chest as its bony fingers dug into his flesh, clawing and raking at him as if it planned to dig his heart out. Ed gasped in a gulp of air, the stench hitting him and making him choke. This close, it was overwhelming. He could practically feel the grave beckoning with its perfume, and he thrashed against the thing, trying to find some weakness he could use. A swift, sharp kick broke bones that should have been too fragile to support its weight, and the thing folded, clattering in pain before it began to drag itself forward again, creeping closer like something straight out of a nightmare. Its eye sockets were blank, but there was something accusing about the set of its jaw, and its companion burbled in reprimand as it picked up the pace. Turning his back, Ed began to scramble away, jumping from one wooden outcrop to the next in an effort to get to the doors. He could hear them behind him, carrying on with mindless persistence. They would not give up until they could go no further, he realized, and he raked his mind for a suitable array to tear them apart. Carmine had not built these things to last. They were cannon fodder, nothing more. If he could overload them, then the bones would shake themselves apart, ripping the fragile construct of their flesh under the jolt of more alchemy than they could contain. It was the easiest way to do it, and if Carmine was waiting on the other side of those doors, then he would just have to think on his feet. The last thing he needed was to be trying to fight her and two of her creations all at once. Clapping his hands together, he spun around, his braid whipping behind him as his teeth clenched in an automatic snarl, ready to unleash a short, sharp shock of power in his pursuer's direction. They were gone. He blinked, narrowing his eyes as he glanced to the left and right, ignoring the hum of alchemy that shimmied under his skin as he looked for anything out of place. A vista of crumpled wooden ruins was all that greeted him. The higher balconies of the library were pristine and untouched, but the main floor was a wreck. They had destroyed everything, and now there was no sign of them. Not a trace. They were hiding. They had to be. He wasn't stupid. Things like that would not just give up and disappear. So where were they? Under the fallen carcasses of one of the bookcases? Loitering in the shadows? A gust of wind blew through the door, banging it back on its hinges, and rattling the loose pages of the books, pitching paper across the floor like autumnal leaves. Slowly, dreading what he would see, Ed looked over his shoulder towards the door, his lips flattening into a grim line as the truth of the situation sank in. Things filed through the door, their uneven paces creating an unlikely marching rhythm as they fanned out, each watching him unblinkingly. Some were old, nothing but bone, but others could not have been dead long, almost human but for the paleness of their faces and the stiff, ungainly way they walked. He could almost believe they belonged in the street. Only the evidence of their death, a perfect round dot of blood between the eyes, a slashed throat, told a different story. There were more than a dozen, and all of them clutched at weapons, from the jagged teeth of a broken bottle to the sleek, brutish lines of a gun. Most of the wounds would be meaningless to Ed, healed in a flash by the power within him. But he was not about to test those limits. Something told him that a bullet between the eyes was something he would not get back up from. His flesh arm twitched, hands still pressed together in a prayer-like steeple, as the energy sang within him, a fresh, bright torrent. They were standing between him and the only way out, and Ed had no qualms about going through them if necessary. He watched, biding his time as they moved awkwardly, all speaking to one another in clicks and grunts as they fanned out, forcing him to shift position, feet stumbling over the treacherous surface of the toppled bookcases. Like a wolf unleashed from its cage, one of them, the youngest, lunged forward. He was a man with clouded eyes, his skin slack on his bones, but still not far from life. He had a long knife in his hand, and moved with a lethal gracelessness, plunging himself towards Ed as if trying to kill him with sheer force. Ed released the alchemy within him, feeling it rear and plunge like a wild animal as it lashed out, etching the library in raw white light. He could hear the pop and crack of bones coming apart, but he was too busy lunging for the door to look back. In one fluid movement, he scooped the book up from the floor and dashed for the outside world. Something slammed Ed into the door, forcing it shut as his head smacked into the wood, pinned in place by the ugly muzzle of the gun that was pressed against his temple. He let out a snarl of anger, but the chilling click of the safety hammer pulled back silenced him as he glared along the outstretched arm to the face of the man that held it. Patches of skin were missing from his face, peeled back like wax from his bones, and the eyes were blank white orbs. But there was focus there, and the strength in its arm was inhuman. He could feel the pressure of it, and he knew the creature could probably kill him just by pushing the gun through his skull rather than pulling the trigger. It wore a uniform, Amstrian blue and gold, as dead and threadbare as the man within it. The braiding had tarnished and the cloth was pitted with mold. There were no medals on its chest, only the dank, dark spread of old blood turning the blue to black. Metal clicked as its finger tightened on the trigger, white knuckles bleaching further as it tested the gun's resistance, balancing its strength through the springs and coils until just one more breath of movement would unleash a bullet, straight into Ed's brain. It hissed, and Ed flinched as he realized it was speaking real words, barely audible, but chilling all the same. So much for the hero of the people. The world bucked, a sharp, furious movement, as if they were in a car and someone had slammed on the brakes. Bricks groaned warningly as the air was filled with a fast, hard roar that shook Ed's bones inside his body. Upstairs, the untouched bookcases fell, punctuating the quiet with their crash and clatter as they tumbled over the balconies. Windows creaked and shattered, raining down knife-like feathers of glass as the plasterwork cracked and crumbled. "Earthquake!" Kaleo's voice was high-pitched with fear, but Ed did not hesitate to lash out at the gunman. A solid kick sent its weapon flying, and the creature staggered back, unable to balance on the floor that shimmied like a drumskin. In a flash, Ed heaved the door open and half fell down the steps, not bothering to stop and see if the creatures followed. The deep bass roaring stopped, leaving the thunder to growl like a playful kitten in its wake. Parked cars had juddered from their places and were angled haphazardly across the roads. Lights flickered on in buildings as people staggered from their beds or picked themselves up from the floor, confused and disbelieving. Ed swore quietly to himself, knowing that the peaceful hive of Central Command would be buzzing. So much for getting back before Roy woke up. Risking a glance over his shoulder through the driving rain, he saw no sign of Carmine's creations. Perhaps they were already fleeing back to her side, or maybe they lay in pieces among the library wreckage. Either way, he had to warn Roy that there was more to Carmine's threat than just her alchemy. How many more of those things had she put together in the time since their last fight? He splashed around the corner, letting out a tight sigh of relief as he saw Central Command still whole. Ed did not know how strong the earthquake had been, but Kaleo's panic had held a contagious edge. The boy had seen so much of his city tumbled to the ground, and, for a moment, Ed had expected to see Central reduced to rubble. Yet the city held firm and defiant, a little shaken, but still standing. All of the lights were on, sending rippling squares of reflection across the waterlogged parade ground. There were soldiers around, scurrying through the rain as they went from one office to the other, getting reports together so that they could answer the inevitable questions from the higher-ups. Already they would be swinging into emergency mode, preparing themselves to deal with the consequences of the brief onslaught of the earthquake. Even if the structural damage was limited, the civilians would need reassurance. Knowing that the army was ready to manage the situation was essential to stop any panic. He tripped up the steps and broke into the dry halls of the building, pausing for breath as he shivered with a mixture of chill and waning adrenaline. The book was damp in his hands, but his body had protected it from the worst of the downpour. He clapped his hands, applying them to his hair and clothes, and evaporating the water into steam. Finally, with a great deal more care, he did the same to the book, erring on the side of caution. The last thing he needed was for it to disintegrate in his hands. His feet knew the way back to the office, and he flicked open the pages and skimmed through the passages, picking out the general trend of the words and dismissing them. Why did it always take people so long to get to the point? He did not need to know the alchemist's inspiration. He needed to know what array to use, needed to know if it was even possible. Reaching out for the handle, he looked up in surprise as the door was yanked open. Havoc almost walked into him, blinking blearily in surprise to find Ed on the threshold. A cigarette hung from his lips, unlit, and his eyes were groggy and confused. Eventually, he stood aside, letting Ed pass before muttering tiredly about coffee, and stepping out into the corridor. The office was almost fully manned, and was filled with confused activity. Brita was skimming through a file, his lips moving silently as he read its contents. Fallman was rifling through one of the cabinets, while Fury searched the paperwork on his desk, shaking his head frantically when he failed to unearth whatever it was that he was looking for. Hughes was on the phone, talking with calm, quiet relief to Alicia, listening to her excited chatter about the earthquake with a tired smile. He looked drained and exhausted, but the simple joy of hearing his daughter's voice eased the lines that etched themselves into his face. Roy was leaning against the doorframe to his personal office, watching Ed with unreadable eyes, his face a blank, expressionless mask. "Is there anything you need to tell me?" he asked quietly, and Ed knew that no one except him could hear the anger behind those words. It was kept on the shortest possible leash, but still snarling and straining to be free. "Your note was not particularly informative." Ed bristled, hating the coldness in Roy's tone. He made a short, angry gesture with the book in his hand. "I thought I would save us some time and grab this from the library. I would have been there and back in 20 minutes, but I got held up." "You're not meant to go anywhere alone. That was never a request, Fullmetal. That was an order." A snarl was caged behind Ed's clenched teeth, and with great effort he managed to keep it contained. They were not lovers in the office, He knew that. As long as he was in the army, Roy would always be his commanding officer and had to behave as such. He could not even show how angry he was at Ed, because it would be a break from his normal behavior and would be noted. Here, Roy could not say that he had been worried about what Ed planned to do, or that his health would take a turn for the worse when no one would be around to help him. He could only say something about disobeyed orders and hope Ed heard the words that weren't being spoken. For once, Ed listened, and he could hear the fear behind the blank facade. It was present in the straight, hard set of Roy's shoulders and the clench of his jaw. He was afraid for Ed, and for all that the future held. Regardless of whether they succeeded or failed, the outcome did not look good. Ed took a deep breath, his fingers tightening on the book as he forced himself not to snap a response. Instead, he said quietly, "We don't have time to waste, and everyone's sleep was too important to disturb." He shrugged uneasily, hoping that Roy would understand what he was trying to tell him. "Sometimes I have to disobey orders. I didn't go anywhere else except the library." Roy relaxed a fraction. His features softened. He was still angry and afraid, but at least he seemed to believe Ed's words. "What held you up?" Behind him, Ed heard the door open to admit Havoc again, bringing the sharp scent of coffee with him. Fury was still searching his desk, but his movements had slowed. Hughes had hung up the phone a while ago and was watching Roy and Ed with considering eyes, while Breida seemed to have forgotten about the file in front of him, his gaze unfocused as he shamelessly listened in on what Ed had to say. "I wasn't the only one there," he said quietly. "Remember the things Carmine had with her at Ryder's?" Roy nodded, and Ed saw him rasp his fingers together softly as if recalling the snap and crackle of the flame that had burned the rag-bundled bodies to nothing. "Reanimated corpses." The coffee pot in Havoc's hand clattered as he twitched in alarm, wide eyes looking between the two of them. "Reanimated," he choked in a horrified voice. "You mean zombies?" A younger Ed would have rolled his eyes and said there was no such thing. But then, there really weren't many other words that could describe the stumbling, ungainly human remains that had chased him in the library. "Carmine fuels them with alchemy. They don't have much intelligence, but they're strong." He turned to Roy. "She's been making more. There were at least a dozen in the library. I got maybe half of them. The others disappeared when the earthquake started." Roy lifted a dark eyebrow fractionally, taking yet another facet of this disaster in his stride. "The earthquake?" he asked quietly, his voice dead calm. "Was that something to do with you?" The shrill ring of the phone cut through the office, and Fury fielded the call, talking in swift, professional tones as Ed perched on the edge of his desk and flicked through the pages of the book before answering Roy's question. "No. It's what Kaleo warned you about. Amstris is starting to suffer the strain. It'll just keep getting worse until there's nothing left." "Unless you rebuild the gate." That was Hughes, quiet and steady, as if such things were a day-to-day activity in the army. "If you manage that, then the disasters will stop, won't they?" "Gate?" Breida asked, his brow twisted in a knot of confusion. "What gate?" Roy's men knew something of alchemy. Fractional pieces of trivia and hazy rumor made up the majority of their knowledge. But when it came to something like this, they were fighting blind. Perhaps they knew Carmine was a threat, and maybe soldiers were not meant to ask questions, but Ed knew they had a right to know what they were fighting and why. He glanced across at Roy with a question in his eyes, and was rewarded with a fractional nod of understanding. Roy was not a normal commanding officer. He did not give orders and expect blind obedience. He did not want mindless drones working under him, and, in situations like this, he would respect whatever choice his men made. Still, before they could make a decision, they needed to be told exactly what they were up against. "Excuse me, sir," Fury said quietly, pushing his glasses up the bridge of his nose. "That was First Lieutenant Hawkeye. The hospital has suffered structural damage and are discharging all non-critical patients. She is bringing Alphonse and the two boys from the sewer here. That way they're close to the military hospital if they need medical attention. Roy nodded, glancing to the side as he considered his options. He looked older, with hard lines etched into his face by exhaustion and relentless anxiety. Ed longed to smooth them away, but Roy would not let anyone else take his burden from him. He may feel powerless, but the lives of his men were something he would do his best to preserve. As soon as Lieutenant Hawkeye gets here, I will debrief you on what's been happening. You know some of it already, but you need to be in possession of all the facts before you can act. Is it something to do with alchemy, sir? Thalman asked. It's everything to do with alchemy, Ed replied, adding firmly, but it's not just the alchemists who are going to suffer. Mustang, I need to see if this will even work. He gestured with the book again. If it doesn't... He did not bother finishing that sentence. If there was no other way to get to Babylon, then they were in very deep shit. Do whatever you have to. Is there anything else you need? Chalk, Ed shrugged. And a wall to draw on. It'll probably work better that way. He put a hand in his pocket, feeling the glassy chip of stone and the gold ring in his pocket. A tiny idea bloomed in his mind, and he turned the ring over in his automail fingers. Can you get Winry here as well? She might come in useful. The office bustled, filled with the high-wire thrill of adrenaline. Thalman and Breida cleared the filing cabinets from one wall while Fury tried to find Ed some chalk. It was easy to set it all aside, to let the noise fade out to nothing but a background buzz as he lost himself within the words of the book. Too many years of study had taught him how alchemists worked. Even the best of them were rarely able to put their thoughts down in order. Their theories skipped about like a broken record, and he had to pick up the pieces and put them together before he could even begin to get the whole picture. Gradually he managed to make sense of what the writer was trying to say, and he felt his lips twist in a grimace. He needed more than one array. In order to contract the space between the two destinations, there had to be one design at each end. Drawing one in Central was no problem, but creating one in Babylon was next to impossible. Biting his lip, he scowled at the paper. There was not time to adapt the man's arrays to make it work from one end only. It probably was not even possible. But he couldn't give up on this. He had to see the array that created the gate. There was no element of choice about it. If they wanted to stand any hope of success, then they needed the information emblazoned across Babylon Central Square. He had seen Kaleo City only briefly, but there was one part of it that he had viewed more than once. The fountain where the young king had splashed in the puddles was forever engraved in Ed's memory. He could visualize the anchor, the same as he did when he used alchemy without drawing an array. Would it work? Turning to the back of the book, he looked over the firm, decisive lines of the author's design. Without really trying, he could see the minuscule flaws and assumptions that would stop it from working. Easy enough to fix. But even if perfectly balanced and sketched, there was no guarantee that the energy would flow right. If it did not work, it would not just be him who got caught in the backlash. Restlessly, he shook his head, looking up to stare blankly at the wall. He had never let potential failure stop him before. If he had, then they would never have been in this mess. Still, this array was vast, as complex as what he had used for human transmutation, but it dealt with nothing as solid as flesh and bone. It was not often he came across alchemy he did not think he was capable of seeing through to completion. There were plenty of transmutations he shouldn't perform. But that did not mean that he was unable to make the arrays work. This, however, was new ground for him, and he felt as if he were 6 years old again, untried and untested and faced with so much knowledge that he could not comprehend. Determined, he grabbed a piece of chalk from the box, put the book aside, and got to work, letting himself fall into the meditative trance of deep concentration. His senses were still active, but anything that was not to do with this alchemy slid out of focus. He was aware of the opening and closing of the door, Russell's demanding questions and Al calling his name before falling silent. The whole room was quiet, and he dimly realized that Roy must have taken the rest of the staff to his office to brief them on the situation. Ed wondered what they would think, what they would say. Would they even believe it? What was happening to him was hard enough for alchemists to comprehend. Could a soldier who had only ever seen arrays activated from a distance understand the effect that power was having on their world? His question went unanswered as his mind's eye shifted and refocused on the array, taking shape beneath the smooth sweeps of the chalk. There was no space for uncertainty in alchemy. Flaws were fatal. It was perfection taken to the heights of art and rendered down to its most basic components. Even for him, every array visualized and activated was a risk. It did not take long to draw out the basics of the design, but it was only a framework. In the end, that was the easy part. The shape of the array helped to modulate the flow of energy, amplifying it and dispersing it where necessary. But it was a simple circuit, adding the lines of the other components, those that could change state and blend together elements to form new compounds. That was the hard part. He blew his hair out of his face as he kept going, not sure if there was any conscious thought guiding the hand that held the chalk. It was almost as if the array was already there within the brickwork, and he was just giving it definition. More than once, he found himself tempted to add other circles, to fall back on the old designs that had become so familiar to him since the gate had invaded his mind. But it would not work that way. This needed the energy focused to a point, sharp and powerful. A prickle of sensation ran up the back of his neck, a heartbeat before the second earthquake hit like a wave, slamming into the side of a boat, making the windows rattle. Someone yelped in surprised fear, and Ed pressed one palm to the bare wall to stop himself from smudging the lines. Chairs toppled and lights flickered as papers drifted in all directions, shaken loose of their towers on the desks.
"They're getting worse!"
Kaleo's whisper went unacknowledged as Ed looked over his shoulder. Winry was clinging to Al with her eyes shut tight, as if she expected the roof to fall on her head. Strange, he had not even heard her arrive. Fletcher was perched in Breida's chair, pale-faced and wide-eyed as he stared around, clutching the blankets around his shoulder. Russell was braced against the wall by Roy's office door, and Ed would bet that he had been listening in before the shutters had made him lose his balance. From the half-wary, half-angry look in his eyes, he had probably heard everything. "What are you?" Russell whispered, picking himself up and edging towards Fletcher as if he thought that Ed might attack. He looked young and uncertain, painfully so in comparison to the years that weighed heavy on Ed.
"Busy," he snapped back. "If you and Fletcher have any sense, you should get out of Central. It's not a good place to be right now."
"What the hell does that mean?" Russell demanded, snorting in annoyance when Ed turned back to the array and kept drawing.
"Even if we wanted to leave, we probably can't. Do you honestly think the trains are running? The tracks are probably wrecked by the quakes or flooded by the train. We're stuck here whether we like it or not, so you might as well tell us what's going on."
Ed scowled at the array, noticing tiny cracks in the plasterwork to one side. If another tremor damaged the design while he was on the other side, then he would be stuck in Babylon's sandy streets. After a moment's thought, he drew an external barrier line that would protect it from anything but a direct hit. It was not exactly a failsafe, but it was better than nothing. A hand grabbed his wrist, and he twisted with a snarl already on his lips. Russell's grip was hard and fast around Ed's automail. The expression on his face was completely unforgiving.
"I'm stuck here with my brother. If I'm going to protect him, then I need to know what's happening. Last time I saw Al, he was still in armor, and you didn't have..."
He gestured to the array glowing gently on Ed's forehead.
"That! What did you two do?"
"Nothing!" Ed spat, yanking his hand free.
"We didn't start this. We're just trying to end it. If you want to keep Fletcher safe, then the best thing you can do is stay out of this. I don't have time to explain it to you."
He smirked.
"I'd have to think of small words so you could understand."
"Fuck you," Russell muttered,
releasing Ed's wrist with a shake of his head. Should have known you would be brat about it. Ed scowled, forcing his focus back on the array. Dimly, he could hear Al speaking in a quiet voice, but it was just a burble of sound on the edge of his senses. He cuffed out a sigil with his fleshed hand, feeling the scrape of the wall beneath his skin as he obliterated it and redrew, biting his lip in thought as he carefully visualized the array's twin in his mind, reversing every aspect of its design. His mind was eerily silent, but he could feel the growing storm of the gate's disapproval. Now, wide awake and firmly in control, he was untouchable. The gate could not reach through the barrier of Kaleo's presence to get at him. But in the days of alchemy, he felt that much closer to it, vulnerable and open. He could feel its attacks, testing the limits of his resistance, pushing and probing and clawing as he added the last touches to the array. Finally, his muscles stiff and aching from stretching one way and the other to position every aspect of the design right, he stepped back to survey it as a whole. There was enough latent power seeping into Amstrus from the plane of the gate that the lines already had a trace of a glow to them, inactive but alive. Pure, crisp white marked the protective boundary, but the hexagonal lines of the inner array, sharp corners rather than smooth curves, was like the darkest blue ink. Will it work? Ed blinked over his shoulder at Roy and realized that everyone was watching him in silence. Their faces held too many emotions to count. From Al's confidence in Ed's ability, to Russell's anger, to Havoc's fear. Even Hawkeye, who normally presented nothing but a professional exterior, was scrutinizing the array intently, as if trying to judge whether it was a danger. He shrugged, wiping his hand across his forehead absently. If it doesn't, we'll never know. It'll probably blow away most of the city. It uses that much power? Fletcher asked, speaking for the first time. His voice was hoarse, and Ed glanced at him, seeing the weakness in his young body. He was still suffering from Lamia's poison, but his face was defiant and sharply intelligent. Russell might be an excellent plant alchemist, but Fletcher had always had a child's curiosity about anything new. Now he looked at the array on the wall almost hungrily. Yeah, it's meant to be able to connect two places that are far apart, so you can travel quickly from one to the other. But no one's ever done it before. I don't think they've even tried. Can you afford to lose that much energy? Roy asked. His voice held the cool logic of a commanding officer. And, beneath that, hidden behind the words, a softer, personal concern. The question was simple and unadorned, but Ed knew that he was really asking if it would compromise him. Would he still be as strong on the other side? Would he still even be there at all? Skimming the design with his gaze one last time, he took a deep breath, letting the chalk fall to the floor as he stepped forward. There's only one way to find out. He concentrated on the fountain in Babylon, on the memory of the broken stonework and the dead arrays on the floor. Kaleo helped with remembered perfumes and sounds, adding a rich layer of reality to the pictures in Ed's mind. Lightly, his fingertips brushed the outer periphery of the array. Several people in the room drew a hiss of breath, the alchemists, perhaps, as the nebulous energy suddenly found its focus, concentrating itself through him and into the lines, building the power layer on layer as the alchemy stretched across the distance. He could feel the heat of it like the warmth of a fire brushing his face. It was contained, for now. But there was a feral, vicious edge to the alchemy, and he forced himself to ignore his senses as he concentrated on the visualization of the array at the other end. Energy snapped and hummed, tangling together as it failed to find an anchor, looping around in a frenzy as Ed struggled to keep it under control and guide it to the design that would hold fast and firm. His teeth were clenched painfully tight, and he could feel the lines of the array burning into his flesh fingertips. But if he let go now, Central would be reduced to ashes. Finally, like a sword plunging into the earth, the energy anchored itself, burning the bright lines of the array onto the sandstone, The air resonated with power, the distance twisting and curling in on itself as miles reduced themselves down to nothing but a handspan. Ed's muscles shook with the effort, and he felt the gate lash out, clawing painfully through his mind but still failing to take hold. He was safe from its clutches, but that did not stop the weariness from making his legs tremble. He felt hollowed out, as if he were nothing more than an empty body drained of all its force. Except that, with his next breath, he could feel more energy flowing into him, taking the place of what was lost. It felt too sharp and hot to be human, and he felt a flash of gratitude that he was not accidentally robbing anyone in the room of their strength. This power was overspill from the gate, flowing like water to the lowest point, drawn to him as if it were its natural place. At any other time, he would have been disturbed by the sensation, but he knew he needed the strength to keep the gate at bay and see this day through to its end. Opening his eyes, he waited for his vision to clear, blinking away the dappled spots in front of his eyes to look at the wall. A hole had bloomed in the plasterwork, but rather than the next room, it looked into a place both alien and familiar to him. Sunlight dappled the fountain courtyard, and he could see that the high walls of a chasm stretched up in the distance as if the city had sunken into the ground. Plants, sparse but green with life, fluttered tendrils in a parched breeze, and dust twisted like snakes across the stonework. He had seen this place in memories and dreams, but he had never imagined he would set foot in its streets. Babylon.